number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, you may not like it, and you actually wouldn't be wrong. You can complain. You can say they never belonged. You can say that the committee was flawed in putting Syracuse into the NCAA tournament. But you get what you get, and Syracuse is now a Final Four team. And look, I think they earned it. I know that their path was a little easier because Middle Tennessee State took down Michigan State. But that's no fault of their own. And today's game against Virginia, where they moved to the full court press and they got the turnovers off of Virginia, who's a very good defensive team, and they were able to hit their outside shots. They were able to score the points. They were able to go on a big, massive run. You know, they earned their trip to the Final Four. Yeah, again, the path was easy. Yeah, you could make the case that they didn't belong. But I think there is a point where even the most stringent opponent of a team like Syracuse getting a nod because, my God, they lost to St. John's and Clemson. Oh, my God. You still have to give them credit when they take advantage of the moment. And beating Virginia is taking advantage of the moment. Yes, Middle Tennessee State is not going to carry the firepower for a second game in a row, right? And even beating Dayton, right? Syracuse is a team that played Gonzaga, and I gotta take it on the lump because I thought Gonzaga would roll past them. I said that on Friday morning show. I thought that Gonzaga would win that game handedly, so I doubted Jim Boeheim, and I gotta take my lumps for that. But today's game was really impressive to watch a team that was down by 16 points in the second half to a team that doesn't give up points. That's one of Virginia's biggest calling cards is their defense is outstanding. Syracuse was able to shut them down with their defense and score on the other end. And once they started getting buckets and once they started getting hot, they erased that deficit rather handedly. And now they're off to face North Carolina, where that really wasn't a surprise. North Carolina, when they're on, the best team in college basketball right now. They were on fire. They played a Notre Dame team that was clicking and still beat them handedly. That's how good North Carolina is. I think this Final Four has got a little bit of everything, but it's not the greatest collection of teams that we have. I love Villanova. I think Villanova is the team. I think Villanova, the way they played these last couple of games, especially against Kansas, are a really fun team to watch. I think they're scrappy. They do have a little bit of a chip from all of the, hey, why isn't Villanova doing anything in this tournament over the last couple of years? Buddy Hield is a bona fide college basketball superstar. Oklahoma was my pick to win it all. In a destroyed bracket, this is the only calling card I have. You've got pretty much a complete basketball team in North Carolina. And then you've got this, they're led by a Hall of Fame coach. They kind of don't belong, yet they're proving doubters, you know, wrong. Syracuse in the Final Four. So it's good from the standpoint that you have a 2-2-1. And then you throw in this 10 seed that people debated about at the beginning of the tournament. It's got a little bit of everything. Is it the best collection? I don't know. I don't think this is one of those Final Fours for the ages. I'm not going to go that far. But if you're looking for little angles to this thing, then I think Villanova and Oklahoma's got a good game ahead of them. Again, a strong defensive team. That let's be honest, outside of Ryan Arcidiacono, Buddy Hield is a bona fide star, and Villanova doesn't really have a star. Chris Jenkins is good. Archie Diacono is very good, but they're not Buddy Hield level. I mean, they're not on the level of bona fide superstars. And you've got an Oklahoma team that continues to find ways to really showcase who they are. And then you have an ACC matchup in North Carolina and Syracuse. I hope that game's better than what it's being talked about already. That this game could be a real North Carolina rout. But I don't know. Jim Boeheim's teams, they're just unpredictable. So this should be pretty good. Again, I don't think it's one for the ages, but I'm not complaining about it. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. The telephone number to join us on the show tonight, Eric Watkins is going to join us from Rivals.com to talk about Villanova at the bottom of the hour. Jay Wright's club has really underperformed over the last couple of years. They went to a Final Four in 2009, and he's had very good teams come into the tournament, teams that people really have liked, teams that... Again, defensively, that's kind of Jay Wright's hallmark. All of the things that you know a Villanova team could be, and they have failed to get out of the first weekend. And then this is the team that has carried that sort of burden into this tournament, especially the seniors. And now they're in the Final Four. And what I thought was as good a fun basketball game to watch the other night, Villanova beating Kansas. Just hanging around with the Jayhawks, playing with Kansas, tightening up that defense, Archie Diacono making that strip at the end, hitting their free throws, hitting shots. I loved it. It was really, really fun. And Oklahoma, what can you say about Buddy Hield that hasn't already been written 1,000 times? He's been like this entire season. I mean, don't forget, there was a game earlier this year when Oklahoma went to Kansas, and Jayhawk fans gave him a standing ovation because of his performance in a triple overtime game against the Jayhawks. They torched Oregon. And the Pac-12, yikes. Oregon, I wonder, and I'm just me now thinking, I wonder how much the Pac-12 really was that overrated, or did they just have a terrible tournament? Because sometimes that happens. And Oregon getting into the Elite Eight is not a terrible, terrible part of the tournament. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, when you look back on the Pac-12 in this year's NCAA tournament, it is massive disappointment with one shining team that got blown out in the Elite Eight. That's not something to hang your hat on. Whereas if you saw the ACC crowing like crazy about owning Friday night, and then of course getting two teams into the finals because Syracuse and North Carolina were playing on Sunday in an all ACC showdown. So that being said, the one conference that had a really good year, the ACC, crowing a bit, and then the Pac-12 people either making excuses or wondering how the heck we overseed them in the first place. But overall, this is what we're down to. Now, I said one time, a couple of weeks ago, I said, when this is all said and done, when we get to Houston and we've got the four teams in the Final Four, add up the losses, and I can almost guarantee that the losses of this year's Final Four is going to be the highest loss total that we've ever had in the Final Four. And it is. There is a combined 31 losses in the four teams that are in there. Obviously, Syracuse being a 10 eats up a lot with 13, but the two twos in the Final Four have combined for 12 losses this season. Syracuse with 13 and North Carolina with 6. 31. That's your Final Four, and it's not a bad one. It's not a bad one. Again, there's stories here. Buddy Hield, Jim Boeheim, Roy Williams, North Carolina, Bryce Johnson, Villanova, Jay Wright. I mean, there's some stories here. It's good. And it's almost as chalk as you can get. I mean, outside of Syracuse beating a number one seed, it could have been 2-1s and 2-2s in the Final Four. That for a year that didn't develop into one larger-than-life basketball team. All right, again, 800-777-2907. So Eric Watkins is going to join us, Rivals.com, to talk about Villanova and the year that was for the Wildcats and what we can expect about Oklahoma. By the way, those two teams played each other in Hawaii earlier this year in December at the Pearl Harbor Classic in Honolulu. And Oklahoma won by a lot. Now, some people will try to look into that, and we'll ask Eric about this, because I'm not a guy that looks at those kind of things and goes, oh, look, they beat him earlier. Yeah, it might as well have been 100 years ago. Beginning of the season in Hawaii, getting things rolling, making adjustments during the regular season. But you might be able to take some slivers of information out of a meeting like that. Syracuse, North Carolina, they play each other during the regular season anyway. So we'll probably be analyzing that to death. But I just think with Syracuse now, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what to make of the Orange. That's one for their record books. Coming back against a one team down 16, against a team that doesn't give up points and scoring like that. All right, coming up next, we'll talk more about the NCAA tournament, the Final Four, your thoughts as well. But I want to get into something rather interesting that was said on the air that I think people are going to be making a very big deal about, but I don't know. We'll play big deal, little deal coming up next. Eric Watkins, Rivals.com on Villanova, and we'll get into more of the Coach K situation from Thursday night because that escalated quickly. It's Tony D on the Nighttime, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
Well, if you liked our Facebook page, please do Tony D Radio Show. You can give us your thoughts on the Final Four there. 800-777-2907. Syracuse in North Carolina, Nova, and Oklahoma. I know people have problems with Syracuse, and I was one of them. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and say I was wrong. I didn't think they deserved to get in. But once you're in, take advantage of it, and Syracuse is taking advantage of it. Let's go to Tanner in Dallas. He's next up on Yahoo Sports Radio. What's up, my friend?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. What's on your mind?
Hey, so I was just want to know your thoughts on the that last kind of controversial call with the kickball on that sent their top scorer, Graham, out of the game.
Yeah, I thought that was a bad call. That was a bad call, at least from the way I looked at it. I mean, I don't know what they were seeing, but they called – he was diving for a ball. He never really had possession, and they called him for a foul as he dove into the Villanova kid?
Yeah, I just kind of thought that that kind of killed their momentum because, I mean, he was the only guy that could score a three. And then they just kind of, turned the ball over, and that was kind of the last shot to get anything going. And I thought they could have pulled a comeback if they could have made a play there, but that kind of just killed the whole, momentum of the game, which I thought kind of blew the whole,
It did, but I also thought Kansas also was getting careless at the end. I didn't think their shots were very good, and their offensive possessions were all that crisp.
Yeah, they couldn't. I thought they were just kind of jacking shots too, because they couldn't get three to go. But I kind of thought the refs just kind of didn't let them play, and I had Kansas to win the whole thing, so that kind of blew it. But I didn't know if you guys had any thoughts on that.
I thought that was a bad call, but I kept my brother was in town for Easter, and we were both watching some hoops, and we were watching that game, and both of us kind of were looking at it and trying to figure out. It was one of those things where we had people in the house and the sound wasn't down. So we kept rewinding it and trying to figure out what was happening. And I just kept going, I don't know what they saw. I don't know what they're calling this for. I just do not know what they're calling this for. I don't know what. And I'm wondering if it was one of those things because Bill Rafferty was one of the commentators said they can't change anything once they make this call. So I thought it was just a bad whistle. So that's I kind of agree with you, but I don't think that was the thing that set Kansas reeling. I just thought they lost some poise. They looked a little desperate towards the end. I didn't think their shots were very good at the end of that game. And it didn't look like offensively they were in rhythm. Now that may have had something to do with it, but as a coach, Bill Self has to get that group, regardless of what happened, has to get that group back together. I didn't think they got back together. And Villanova had, what, like a 10-0 run to get back into a game that they were down in. So I don't think that call was the be-all, end-all, but I still didn't think it was very good at all. All right, 800-777-2907. I never really even saw a good explanation for it afterwards.
There really isn't a good explanation for it. There's no way that's a foul any time of any game.
Yeah, and that's what I kept looking at. I was like, well, what? Maybe there was something I missed. Maybe there was something that. But it seemed like that seemed to be the consensus that this was just a really bad blown call.
The only way it's a foul is if the kid that's sliding basically moves his arm up or his leg up to keep the kid from moving towards the ball. And he clearly didn't do that.
He clearly didn't.
He just slid into him and didn't do anything. So, again, it was another rough weekend for the referees.
Yeah,
another
weekend
for the referees.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
The overall play that we've been talking about for the last few weeks, it was pretty good. I don't know how much defense was really played, but the offensive games were showing up, and they were rather good.
I was really surprised that Virginia couldn't hold on to a 16-point lead.
That was pathetic.
Really?
And, you know, the one thing I took, you know, when Syracuse got that full press going, full court press going, the one thing I hated that Virginia kept doing, because they're not this style of team, was they would get it and they would go down and they would try and make some layup, basically one on two, and they would miss it every time instead of just pulling it back out, setting up your offense with about, you know, 22 seconds to go, and then running a play against the 2-3.
Isn't that the way Virginia plays? I mean, their games are like 58-54.
Yes,
those
they want
games.
The least amount of possessions is better for Virginia.
Why are you getting into this matchup where you're letting the momentum slide so easily to the Syracuse side of things? And granted, there was a point where they were making they were making bad shots, and Syracuse was out rebounding them, and they were committing turnovers, and Syracuse was turning them into points on the other end, and all of that. But I was really shocked there wasn't one adjustment Tony Bennett couldn't make.
Yeah, I really think
stop this onslaught, because if you lose a 16-point lead, if you're letting another team go on a 29-8 run to close up the game, I'm not blaming that entirely on execution on your players.
Right.
I'm blaming that on some sort of scheme. I mean, you've got to change something. That's not your team letting you down. That's a coach not being able to figure out what to do next.
Yeah, because a lot of their shots, you know, in the second half of against the 2-3 was Prentice at the top just shooting threes.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I mean, they would get it to the middle and then just kick it right back out to him and he'd shoot it.
I just perplexed. Tony Bennett, perplexed. All right, let's go to James in Indiana. You're next up on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Morning, Tony.
What's on your mind, my friend?
Well, I'm sorry I haven't been on here for a while. I've been on vacation.
Well, good for you. You probably deserve the vacation.
Yeah.
What is on your mind?
Daytona.
What'd you say?
It was a great trip to Daytona.
Oh, good. I'm glad you went to Daytona. What's on your mind, man?
All right, let's talk college basketball. I didn't get a chance to see the Elite Eight games this weekend, but I must admit, even I'm a little perplexed by the Final Four.
Well, I mean, hold on one second. Are you really that outside of Syracuse? What is the surprising element of two twos and a one?
No. I figured Kentucky would be there. And by the way, did you hear what Calipari said today?
Well, I didn't hear what Calipari said today because I'm kind of losing interest in Calipari now that his team's not in it, and I don't like to give him the time of day when his team's not in the tournament.
Well, I'll tell you what.
What did Calipari do now? Because I know he's all over the draft. That's his next thing.
That's what I heard.
Calipari, when we left off last week, Calipari had basically made sure every one of his kids that was draft eligible would get a look at the draft. Now, if you go to the combine, you don't like it, you can go back to school as long as you don't sign with an agent. I think he was sending all of his kids to the kids there in an effort to sort of again tell people that Kentucky's the place you want to go to if you want to go to the pros.
That is absolutely stupid.
No, it isn't. It's a brilliant move.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, he hasn't won all those SEC titles and a couple of NCAA championships for nothing. But for him to say that his kids are all eligible for the draft, that's BS in my book.
Okay, hold on, James. I've got to explain how this works. Okay, he took all of his players who are eligible for the draft and are letting them be evaluated for the draft. Not all of them are going to the NBA. They're all just going to get looked at. Now, you can get looked at, but as long as you don't sign with an agent, you can come back to school within 10 days of the combine. He is basically saying, I've got a lot of talent here. They're all going to get looked at because in the end, that's what they all want to do, and is supporting them in that pursuit. I think it's a brilliant idea if he wants to keep getting NBA-level recruits because it continues to drive home the branding that Kentucky and the NBA are coexist. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio. and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us as we continue to look at the Final Four and the games that happened on Saturday and Sunday. Villanova beating Kansas 64-59 is one of the tickets got punched into Houston. Eric Watkins gives us an insight on the Wildcats. He joins us from Rivals.com covering Villanova. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Thanks. All right, so when I looked at this basketball game, I know everything about Villanova. Again, number one team in the nation, 30-plus wins, great defense. This had a little bit of an upset feel. Did it feel like an upset when they knocked off the Jayhawks?
I'm sure there's some that found it to be a bit of an upset, but I think the majority of people that watch college basketball closely this season wouldn't think that the game was an upset.
Is it because of what Villanova is as a basketball team? Because, I mean, again, if you've been following this sport, this is a typical Villanova team. And Kansas, while being a quote-unquote blue blood, Villanova's been around for a while.
That's true. They have been around for a while. They, just a couple of years back, many of the same players faced each other in a game. It was early in the season, but in the Bahamas, Villanova knocked off Kansas with a buzzer beater from Archie Diacono, or with about 10 seconds left, Archie Diacono hit a three that gave Villanova the win in that game. So I think there was some familiarity for Villanova in the sense that they felt that they could beat the team before and could do it again.
If you're going to evaluate this Villanova team compared to the other teams that he's had, Jay Wright, who's this disappointment of getting to these tournaments with some very good teams and not being able to fulfill getting to the Elite Eight or getting to the Final Four. How different is this basketball team?
They might be a little more hardened mentally and maybe playing with a little bit more of a chip on the shoulder because of the fact that they've spent the last year, you could argue almost 2 years, trying to or having to answer the same question from the media repeatedly about the you know, why aren't you this? Why aren't you that? Kind of what is the issue or problem with your team? When really, I think those close to the program never felt there was a problem that needs to be dealt with. They felt that they were doing things the right way. Had a great team. Had a lot of leadership. Had scoring. Had grit and determination and defense. But came a player too short of advancing.
What was the key for the Wildcats in this game against the Jayhawks on Saturday?
It was the grind-it-out attitude. There's the thought that, no matter what the score or the time of the game, each possession is cherished. And even when shots don't fall, they continue to play defense, rebound, knowing that eventually they'll get enough offense to get the win.
Give us an idea of Archie Diacono in terms of his love affair with this university, his dad, and his love affair with Jay Wright in terms of the relationship those two had, because it was really evident after the game that this was a very emotional moment for him.
They've just been through a lot. The year before Arch came in was a kind of a low-light season for Villanova. The edge that was there in previous years was lost. They just didn't feel that sense of togetherness. It wasn't the... what would you say? There wasn't just the program just didn't wasn't playing together the way they had previously. So Archie Diacono, whose parents both went to Villanova, came in and from the very beginning set the tone and practices that this is the way we're going to play. We're going to play hard. Going to value every possession and his kind of leadership and determination to change around the culture at the school is what really made the difference. And Coach Wright, from the very beginning, has expressed quite an appreciation for that more than anything else, really, in relation to Archie Diacono, with his ability to change the culture.
You talked earlier about how people around the program didn't see what the media kind of coming at them, what went wrong, and they didn't sense that there was anything wrong. It's just the, kind of the nature of the tournament over the last couple of years. But that being the case, was there pressure on the seniors this year to sort of live up to the hype of Villanova basketball?
Well, certainly there was that added pressure. The thought that, especially in that second round game, the feeling that they had to get to the second weekend, and there was both the pressure internal to want to do that. There was the sense from the fans that. They no longer wanted to kind of hear that same mantra repeated for a whole other season. there really was a kind of that burning desire to prove that they could get through that game and, just advance and show that they were that good. There was also a sense of pressure in relation to kind of the conference with the sense that the Big East needs teams to advance to establish a reputation as a power conference early in the life of kind of that new Big East. So there was a sense that they kind of owed something to the conference in terms of making sure they got through to the following weekend.
Eric Watkins joins us, Rivals.com, on Villanova, who advanced to face Oklahoma in the Final Four that will come up in Houston, Texas this weekend. Eric, I know they played earlier this year, and you can throw those statistics out however you want to digest them, but is there anything evident in that game that you're kind of looking forward to seeing in the new matchup in the Final Four?
Yeah, the thought on that from my perspective is that I think the most important thing to pay attention will be the tempo and how Villanova responds to the game in terms of being patient, looking for good shots, making the extra pass, instead of coming down and maybe firing off a quicker three because it's open early in the shot clock. I think you'll see more kind of patience and maturity than the team showed the first time they played. Because what really happened there was Villanova, I think, they didn't take necessarily bad shots, but what they took were often the first open shot that may have been a little bit of a too long a shot or something that kept the tempo of the game a little faster paced than they might have wanted to play against a team like Oklahoma that can really get up and down and spread you out and a team that is really skilled at shooting the three. So when you had Villanova missing threes, it was just feeding the beast kind of in terms of making that game to a tempo, allowed Oklahoma to get out and transition and just knock down a bunch of deep three-pointers in transition.
Eric, what is the fan base like at Villanova? It's Philadelphia. There's a number of other schools in the area. How strong is the fan base in the city of Philadelphia?
I think that's one thing that Coach Wright has focused on throughout his tenure at Villanova is making it more inclusive. There are so many universities in the area, and there's the Big Five, so there's that has a tendency to split the fan base. So it's not like it's Philadelphia just roots for any of the Big Five teams, no matter how good they're doing or how well they're doing. It's the sense that there's some loyalty to maybe one or two of the Big Five schools, the average person that's in the area. But that aside, what you've seen over the past 15 or so years with Jay is that he's really tried to establish a relationship with local folks and have as many games as he could down at the Wells Fargo Center to allow the more casual basketball fans in the city of Philadelphia the opportunity to come see Villanova and to become more likely to follow them and kind of build the fan base there.
Eric Watkins again, Rivals.com, on the Villanova Wildcats advancing out of the South region with their victory over Kansas, setting up that matchup with Oklahoma in Houston. Appreciate it, Eric. Great stuff. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks for your time.
All right, coming up next, I want to get into the Coach K stuff from the weekend. I know he apologized for what he said to Dylan Brooks at the end of the Oregon game, but I thought it was a little out of character. We'll talk about that coming up because there are times when these coaches, these larger-than-life coaches, get put on some, you know, this pedestal. They stand for this or they stand for that. And after this weekend, that for Coach K I thought was a little shaky. He made a mistake, no doubt. But how he handled it afterwards was I thought was very, very out of character for Mike Krzyzewski. Because Mike, you know, Coach K, whether you love him or hate him, has been in this game a long, long time. We'll talk about that coming up. And your thoughts as well on things. 800-777-2907. As we are now down to Nova, Oklahoma, the Tar Heels, and Syracuse. As they all head to Houston for a big week of college basketball. 800-777-2907. Coach K, we'll talk about what went wrong over the weekend for him. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Well, I hope if I ever make a mistake and have to come on the air to apologize, that people would be very forgiving of me and let me have a second chance. And I think Mike Krzyzewski apologizing for what he said to Dylan Brooks of Oregon should not be, you know, cast aside. He did actually apologize. But it still was a very, very odd weekend for Mike Krzyzewski. This was something we touched on the Friday morning show just before we left. We had kind of gotten reports that something was said in the line as Duke had lost to Oregon on Thursday night. And what was, you know, what was said exactly to Brooks, who had made this shot from 30 feet out and basically in the waning seconds of the game. Now, he claimed that Mike Krzyzewski told him that he was too good of a player to be showboating, and he said he was sorry, and he said, "You're too good of a player." And then when Mike Krzyzewski was asked about it, he kind of denied it and basically said, "Yeah, whatever that kid says, you just take it with a grain of salt." Well, then CBS found the audio. And then it was something that he indeed said. Now, I don't care as much about that. Coaches sort of have to lie sometimes. I think Mike Krzyzewski realized he got caught in something. He shouldn't be admonishing another player. He knows that. No matter where his status is in the game and where Dana Altman's status is in the game, he has no right to lecture anybody's players. If he has a problem with a particular player, take it up with Dana Altman and have Dana Altman take care of it, not him taking care of it. But the other thing that I found surprising, and again, I may be reading too much into this, but I had a real problem, given the nature of this tournament, given the nature of the turnaround in the tournament, that Mike Krzyzewski would say something to a kid that could have him thinking about it for a couple of days. Mike Krzyzewski is a legendary coach. Legendary. He was a legendary coach before Dylan Brooks was even born. And so Brooks probably grew up knowing all about the Duke legacy, knowing all about Coach K. He's got his hands in future NBA stars. He's got his hands on national championships. He's got his hands on USA basketball. I mean, when it comes to basketball, there are a few names in America, and Mike Krzyzewski is one of them. So here is Oregon, coming off one of the greatest victories in the program's history. They're on their way to the Elite Eight. And Mike Krzyzewski feels the need at that moment to say something, to admonish a kid that could have him thinking about that for a while. I don't know about you, and maybe Brooks isn't built like this, but I don't know about you, but have you ever been talked to in a way by somebody in authority that made you take it home, that made you think about it the next day? Did somebody ever call you out when you embarrassed them at a party, or you did something that hurt their feelings or did something that bothered them in an office setting, and you went home and told your wife or your girlfriend or some of your buddies, "Man, I really screwed up. Peter in accounting found what I said offensive." Some of us may roll it off. Some of us may go, he's the one with the problem, not me. But sometimes when your boss or somebody you respect says something to you where they're disappointed in you, or they're bothered by you, or you're better than that, you can take it home. I've had that happen a number of times where I've tried to do some things on the radio or say some things on the radio that just weren't my character. And my boss said, "I'm really disappointed. That's not you. You don't do those kind of things." And then made me go home and go, "Wow, what did I do? What was I thinking?" And I wonder if that affected Brooks at all. Mike Krzyzewski just called him out. Mike Krzyzewski called him out within, 48 hours of the next biggest game of his life? Now, maybe Brooks should have been the kind of kid that got over that quickly. He scored 7 points and fouled out in the next game. That may or may not have anything to do with it, and I don't want to imply that it did. But what I'm really disappointed in, and what really bothered me about it, was that Mike Krzyzewski knows better. And I think he alluded to that in the apology. But it still doesn't mean that I can't be disappointed in him. There there is too much tournament experience on his side to know that that's not the time or place. You don't say something like that to a kid when he's got another big basketball game coming up in 48 hours, when the attention should have been on his next opponent, which was Oklahoma, not thinking about what Mike Krzyzewski and how he wronged him. And maybe I'm giving too much credit to Coach K. Maybe in the end, that's the way he always thinks. He's got one of the dirtiest players on his team. What if somebody called one of his players out 2 days before their biggest game? Grayson Allen probably wouldn't care, but you understand my point. If another coach had admonished Grayson Allen or anybody on the Blue Devils within a day of playing their next game, you better believe Coach K would be on the phone talking to that person. He may not make it public, but you better believe he'd be calling that coach, especially if that coach was much younger and not as experienced as he was. Coach K should be ashamed of himself. You have a problem with Brooks hitting that shot? Fine. I have no problems with you having a problem with that. That's not where my issue is. I think it's petty, but nevertheless, if it's something you feel like you need to address, fine. Smart. Be intelligent. He is. He's been in these positions before. He's been a coach in this tournament for decades. That was the time and place. Admonish a kid that's not even one of your players on the moment he's celebrating one of the biggest wins in his life and his school's life, and then you find that's the time I'll tell him. Why don't you go cool down, and then when this all settles down, tell him later. You know, when he doesn't have a game to think about. Yahoo Sports Radio.